This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge here on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 until 9. Tonight we'll be talking with Andy and we'll be tackling all things intersex. But first, I'm going to remind you all again, we've had this conversation before, but please, if you are listening right now and you are not part of our Facebook group, please go type in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 in and go join our group, because we put our announcements there, our upcoming events. Even I come tell you what we're going to be talking about that day, tomorrow, that night. So you really should be in there, because I know there's many more listeners than are in that group. Now, we are continuing with our holy day of the week. So each week what we do is we talk about an upcoming holiday that we're... that is from a different religion from around the world, and we kind of talk about it so that we can learn about these events before they happen, as opposed to, oh, wasn't that there some Jewish holiday or etc. today? And the reason, of course, I say that is because there is a Jewish holiday coming up, and it's called Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat translates almost directly to New Year of the Trees. It's like Tree New Year. This year it will be on the night of the 3rd of February, or also the 4th of... It will be the 4th of February, but it always starts the evening before, so you could say the 3rd of February. Historically, this was a biblical New Year. I guess you could call it the biblical holiday, and it was the New Year for the agricultural calendar. So today we have sort of a calendar year, and we have a financial year. But in biblical times, there was an agricultural year, and there was a king's year, and that everything was calculated according to about four different years, which was, I imagine, very, very confusing. It was traditionally a harvest festival, and because it was a harvest festival revolving around the temple and biblical tithes and all of those systems, the customs that existed when the holiday first appeared are now functionally gone. No one is exactly taking their harvest to the temple that does no longer exists in Jerusalem. But over time, particularly in Kabbalistic strains of Eastern Europe, certain customs developed where Jews would eat a wide range of fruits, both fresh and dried, as well as drink lots and lots of wine. One of the things that they admire is coming from fruit. But the holiday has really found, interestingly, new life in the modern state of Israel. So historically, Jewish communities drain the swamps in the area by planting eucalyptus trees, of all things. So if you were to go there now, you will find eucalyptus trees all over certain parts of Israel. And today, specifically, you'll find that communities that live in the desert in particular work to bloom the desert. And there's a lot of effort to try and make more of particularly the less inhabitable areas more hospitable to at least use up the land efficiently. So that is Tu Bishvat. Now I'd like to move to our guest. Our guest is, I'm very excited, I worked really, really hard to find someone. And our guest is Andy. Andy is the current vice president and the past president of the, and this is a bit hard for me to get it all out, but the Androgen Insensitivity Syndrome Support Group Australia. Do I pronounce that as AISSGA or
ISSGA? Yeah, AISSGA is fine.
AISSGA. And is also a member of the Uniting Church here in Australia.
That's quite correct.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Thank you very much. And I guess we'll ask straight out, but what is intersex?
Intersex conditions are biological conditions. If I use the AMA definition, which is very technical, but basically it results in the birth of a child with sex chromosomes or internal or external reproductive anatomy, which is not your standard typical male or female. And it sounds very convoluted, but basically it's somebody who doesn't fit that standard biological male-female, you know, binary that we talk about.
What sort of different ways can that be? Is that...
It tends to... Quite often you can end up with someone who looks completely male but has, for instance, a different chromosome pattern. So we see quite a lot of those sorts of conditions. We have people who are born looking completely female but who have XY chromosomes and internal testes where they might otherwise have ovaries. There's pretty much... You can pretty much have anything... really is a variation, except the only thing you don't get, which flies in the face of a lot of porno magazines and films and other things that people like to you know, put forward, you can't have somebody with both male and female reproductive anatomy in the same person. So that is, in fact, the old goddess, the old Aphrodite and the, you know, the old legend. It's indeed that, and yes, it's a quaint legend and we all like it, but the reality is biologically it can't happen.
So is that why I noticed that we use the term intersex and not something like hermaphrodite?
Yes, and we do. And look, that in some circles, hermaphrodite's been re-owned, if you like. We had, you know, a group we used to have quite a bit to do with a while ago called Hermaphrodites with Attitude. Yeah, we had, you know, quite a bit to do with a group called Hermaphrodites with Attitude, and they, you know, they're, you know, it's like a lot of words that are out there in the GLBTI community where we reclaim them. But as a general rule, it can be offensive to some people in the intersex community because they don't see themselves as anything other than a woman or a man who has a slight biological difference, some sort of genetic condition.
What about the relationship with the intersex world and the trans world? You're saying intersex is really a biological condition. So is that then a separating point?
It is to an extent. I think what is probably more separating from our point of view is the experiences of trans people, intersex people are very, very different. For intersex people, you have a lot of medical intervention from a very young age. It's something that you get used to. Lots of trips to hospital as a child, lots of prodding and poking by the medical profession. Those sorts of things are something that we grow up with. You get used to things like spending, if you need to have operations, sometimes it's surgery that comes along with being intersex. And what happens is you do things like spending school holidays going to hospital, whereas other kids go off and do other things. Now, because of those sorts of experiences, the intersex community has a very different experience growing up, if you like, than people in the trans community. So it's mostly those things that separate. You know, we're very anti-surgery. One of the things that we don't want is surgery on our bodies without us making decisions. We're almost the complete opposite to a lot of people in the trans community who really want that surgery to affirm who they are. So it's quite different.
How do people choose to identify? I guess it's a hard... I'm assuming the answer is going to be, well, it depends, but... Is there trends of any kind? Do people identify as one gender or the other, or just...
Some people do. There are some people who clearly identify as male or female, and probably the majority of intersex people do that. I've got to be careful saying the majority. The majority of the people I know who are intersex tend to do that.
Sure.
But there are people who, and I think increasingly as more is known and accepted about the intersex community and the people in that community, I think more people are learning to own who they are and actually start to identify more as being intersex rather than male or female.
So what extent do you think are people shifted into taking up a certain gender role at birth or in the early stages of their life?
Look, certainly that has been an issue in the past. Well, it still is an issue. I won't say in the past. It's still an issue for infants that are born with intersex conditions. There is still a push, and we would argue from the point of view most support groups that we deal with, argue that you can't raise a child, certainly currently, there is no way of raising a child as anything other than a boy or a girl. You try sending a child to a school as anything other than a boy or a girl, and it's going to cause all sorts of problems for that child. So there is certainly no choice at that sort of age. I think once people get older, there is that option. There is the option for them to identify as someone that's not necessarily a boy or a girl.
Good evening. You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We're talking to Andy about intersex issues. And if you would like, you have questions of your own, you'd like to join the conversation, please send us an SMS on 0427-JOY949. Or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Of course, as we always say every week, if you have our Joy app, you can also contact us through there. Now, Andy, you've graciously agreed to let me sort of ask some
searching questions.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt a bit, I had to ask you beforehand, you know, are these sort of questions okay? I want to know, can intersex people have biological children?
There are some conditions where that's possible, but it requires a considerable amount of medical intervention when that's the case. If you're talking about what you and I might term, I hate to use the term, natural childbirth or unassisted childbirth, it's almost impossible.
Okay, but it is still interesting. So it's still plausible for some people in some scenarios.
Very rarely.
What I'm just calling biological.
Yes. Certainly unassisted, it's pretty much impossible.
Okay. What do you mean by assisted?
It would require, for those few people that can, they would need to have considerable hormone therapy right through the whole process to allow their bodies to actually carry, you know, a child. So, yeah, very, very difficult.
Again, as I was saying, I mean, thank you very much for letting me ask you those sort of questions. But maybe for people at home and in the future and in other scenarios, and I know certainly when I was looking at your organization, I can see your organization is sensitive about talking. You know, it wants to know that it's going to, the people that are going to be on media outlets or whatever are going to be treated nicely.
I think it's less nicely other than, yes, being careful about hidden agendas when bringing intersex people into programs. I think that's really the problem.
Right. Okay, I understand. But then how can we or anyone else approaching people, what is okay, what's not okay to ask about or to pry into?
Well, I mean, we're people like anybody else. So we are... I guess any question that you would think would be sensitive if you asked somebody else is something that intersex people would be sensitive about too. We don't go prying intimately into the detail of people's sex lives over a cup of coffee in the street with someone that we just meet. So the same applies to people with intersex conditions.
I see. So seeing that people would generally not just come up to me and be like, hey, Tull, so tell me about your penis.
That's exactly right.
Therefore, it would seem probably inappropriate. I think that's a great succinct general rule. So let's move on to you.
Yes.
How was it growing up intersex?
For me, it was not really, I guess, too much of an issue. I had a pretty, a lot of people would say, an idyllic life. I grew up in the country in the Adelaide Hills in South Australia. And as much as, people poke fun at Adelaide, I'm sure that will be the immediate thing that people will call in about. But other than that, I grew up in the Adelaide Hills. I had a great life. I got to climb trees, do all the things I wanted to do, run around like an idiot, and just generally do all the things that kids do. It's not something you tend to be... I mean, most people don't wander around the whole time. And I guess this gets back to that earlier point about the questions. Most people don't wander around every day going, oh, I'm a boy, I'm a boy, I'm a boy, I'm a boy. How does that affect my life? Or I'm a girl, I'm a girl, I'm a girl. How does that affect my life? They just get on with their life and they do it. And particularly kids do that. They're pretty much oblivious to those sorts of sensitivities. So, yeah, for most intersex people growing up, it's the medical intervention side of it is the thing that you notice is different. Otherwise, the rest of it, you're just getting on with it. You're just a kid.
Fascinating. In many ways, by the way, I did not expect that as an answer. I mean, in many ways, I guess that's nice.
It is. I mean, it's not a, as I said, I've got to be careful again. Other people out there have had very different experiences. They've had different, and for each intersex person, because it's, each case is different, the level of interaction they have with the medical profession can be very different. It can vary substantially from one to the other. So that's something to be mindful of too.
And your family attended church as a... In your youth?
Yes. We have a sort of a patched, I suppose, history in that regard. Some members of our family certainly did. That's quite true.
And you attended church yourself?
When I was younger, as a child, not so much. But when I was in my teens, I did start, or late teens, I did start. And I, from then on... Yes, I spent quite a lot of my time. Well, I certainly was regularly involved with the church.
And was the church aware of your, I guess, condition?
Not in the early days, and I guess that's because mostly I wasn't aware in the early days. One of the problems with, not the full details of it. You couldn't put a name to it and be able to sit down and explain it as we have tonight. That's not possible, because for a lot of intersex people, they don't find out all of those sorts of intimate details until quite late in life, so sometimes 20s, 30s. And that's because the medical profession had a policy, if you like, of not telling intersex people about who they were.
That's quite shocking. I had never heard of such a thing. Can we just quickly maybe talk about that? What do you mean? What do you mean that they don't tell you?
Well, there was a New Zealand-born psychologist called John Money. Now, John Money did a lot of research a long time ago that suggested if you raise the reason that boys think they're boys and girls think they're girls is this thing called the blue room, pink room theory. So if you give boys trucks and tanks and, all that stuff and let them run around and get muddy and dirty and all that stuff, they'll think they're boys. If you give, girls dolls and, little tea sets and all those things to play with, they'll think they're girls. And so they used to call it the blue room, pink room theory. Now, he said with intersex children, it was very, very important to unambiguously raise them as either a boy or a girl and never let them doubt that that's who they are. And the only way to do that was not tell them that they're biologically, not necessarily, a boy or a girl.
Okay, but you are going to find out eventually.
Well, yes, and I think, we all knew that. And if you talk to parents, of course, they're going to tell you, of course, a child's going to eventually find this stuff out. Even if you don't tell them, they'll work it out by themselves. So, yes, it was probably a very bizarre, it was a very bizarre idea that you could keep this hidden. But they did for a very long time. That was the standard medical practice right through to, into the 80s, the 1980s and even later in some places, they still advocate not telling the truth to intersex people about who they are.
What's the situation now then?
It's better now. There are certainly probably the grassroots movement to change that actually started here at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne. There's a very, very well-known and respected professional here, and he was one of the first people to say, look, this is ridiculous. We should be telling people once they're old enough to understand, and that's usually once they've started to sort of, do biology at high school, they can generally understand what this is all about. We should tell them the truth. And he actually produced a very well done little book, which has got lots of cute little cartoons in it that goes through and explains what intersex conditions are and, how it works. So, yeah.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and I've been talking to Andy about intersex issues. Before I left, we were talking a little about the way doctors encouraged people or... I guess, withheld information about people's children. How did this impact parents? Were parents told as well, or were they told to lie?
Yes, look, certainly in some cases, in early days it was very easy for medical profession to, I suppose, withhold information from parents as well. So parents didn't actually know what was really going on with the treatment of their child. Of course, as parents became more aware, the unfortunate side effect of that was that they became then complicit, if you like, in withholding that information from their child about who their child is. So that was, and you know, that causes, there are enough difficulties between parents and children without injecting into that, that sort of complexity as well.
Yeah. So you would eventually leave the church that
you had been attending. And that was mostly because I'd seen a number of lovely, very committed, involved in the church, same-sex couples who were treated very badly by the church, and I couldn't in good conscience be part of an organisation that, you know, treated couples in that way. I mean, these were good Christians. These were good people who had a life in the church and helped other people in the church. So to me, it just seemed completely bizarre that an organisation would treat them in that way, as non-people.
What happened to those couples? So we're talking about a situation where they cast out or just sort of ignored?
In some cases, they were certainly encouraged to leave the institution, I guess you might say. And there were various ways of doing that. You know, the usual ostracism is the usual tool. But yes, it's, I think even things like refusing to recognise that their relationship is a real relationship. And so after a time, that takes its toll on someone. They no longer feel, if their relationship is being devalued in that way, that they belong there.
So what's the approach for the intersex community when it comes to same-sex marriage?
We have an interesting perspective on it, because most intersex people, well, regardless of who they are, the biological reality of who we are doesn't fit in with the one man, one woman to the exclusion of all others. It's not possible, because we are, by definition, because of who we are biologically, going to be in both the same-sex and heterosexual relationship, if you like. So it's actually impossible for us, even if we wanted to, and regardless of what I might say on a birth certificate, it's actually impossible for an intersex person to fit into that. That's, you know, the definition that we currently have anyway in the Act, the Marriage Act.
Yeah, certainly in the Marriage Act. But can intersex people... Let's backtrack then again. Even though that's according to the Marriage Act, can currently intersex people get married?
We can. Now, the only problem with that is there's a couple of problems with it. It means that if you're one of the people who doesn't necessarily very strongly identify as male or female, you're going to have to, you know...
Make a choice.
Yeah, that's pretty much make it up as you go along and go, I'm going to have to put up with this to get married. The other problem that we've had in the past is where we've had, let's say, less than scrupulous divorce lawyers... They have actually used that person's intersex status against them in divorce proceedings. So even if they've been legally married, they then turn that against them in court to say, you shouldn't have been in this marriage, it wasn't a lawful marriage anyway.
I see.
So yeah. It can be very unpleasant. So unfortunately, the current Act, without changes to it, the sorts of changes that we all want when we talk about marriage equality across the spectrum, it's really important for intersex people for a number of reasons that are quite different, if you like, to, you know, other same-sex, if I can use that term, couples.
Yeah, I mean, is same-sex even the appropriate term here?
Well, you know, we have pushed for a long time. I think the entire GLBTI spectrum, let's be fair, has pushed for a while that what we're talking about is marriage equality. We're not talking about same-sex marriage. We're talking about marriage equality. Everybody being treated the same.
Right. So we've moved from gay marriage to saying, hang on, we mean same-sex marriage, to saying marriage equality.
That's right. You know, yeah. We should all be able to access marriage as an institution if that's what we want.
Yeah. So do you think religions are accepting of intersex people, or can they be accepting?
They certainly can be. After my sort of, 16-year split, really, with the church, a very good friend of mine suggested that I try the Uniting Church, and she was a member of the Uniting Church. And she actually set up for me, if you like, a meeting with a deacon from the Uniting Church. I can probably shamelessly use her name on the radio and say Reverend Chris Duxbury. She's really lovely.
We should call out the heroes, not a problem.
Yes, that's exactly right. And Chris Duxbury sat down with me and was very frank about it all and said, look, there is a place for you in the Uniting Church. Don't expect it to be perfect. No institution is. But certainly they're not going to have an issue with who you are. So I found that the Uniting Church in particular is very accepting of intersex people. They, just as they are with same-sex couples, you know, it has to be, you have to be fair and say they are with, you know, right across the GLBTI spectrum. So I think that's been a, for me, an eye-opener to come from one institution that had such different views to an institution like the Uniting Church, which has a very accepting and open view of all people, really.
Let's touch, I mean, you left because of issues that you saw when it came to same-sex, except now, so not exactly related to intersex issues necessarily?
No, but you see, the problem is that what you tend to find, well, so I need to be careful and say, in my experience, what you tend to find is if an institution has a difficulty with a particular minority group, let's call them a minority group, they're often going to have, if not the same difficulty, sometimes even worse difficulties with other minority groups. And I figured if they couldn't accept same-sex relationships, there was no way they were going to be able to accept somebody who biologically completely undid, unraveled for them, if you like, that whole Genesis statement of God created man and woman. Yeah, that was not going to be something they could get past.
Talking about man and woman and stuff like that, you actually studied theology at some point.
Yes.
When was that?
It was over a couple of years, and it was about two, three years ago now.
So do you think that theologically, at least, religions are accepting of intersex?
Certainly. A friend of mine made a statement, was being interviewed for a newspaper article, and she said that the Genesis statement about God creating man and woman is actually what's called a theologically inclusive statement rather than exclusive. So rather than creating a divide, it's actually about saying man and woman and anything in between, anything on that spectrum, it all is part of the creation of God. So, you know, we're not about trying to divide and conquer with that statement. What we're about is bringing everybody into the body of the church. So theologically, I think that there is, you know, certainly intersex is included in the theology of the church and should be.
My own, I'll put in then my own sort of experience there, which was, studying Jewish texts and stuff like that. And we look at Genesis and, yeah, it's, Genesis is probably one of those books that was less important and sort of in modern times, just because of the modern issues, it's become a sexy book to study again.
Yes, yeah.
And one of the interesting ones is that there's debates from the Talmud about the nature of Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And the most interesting one I found is that one of the stories they talk about, because there's actually two stories about the creation of Eve that they talk about one after the other, and it points out that in the Hebrew it refers to a person that is created.
Yes.
And then only afterwards, when it was split into Adam and Eve, it's a person, and then afterwards split into a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the implication there was always talked about was that beforehand we're actually looking at not a male and then a male and a female, but sort of as we sort of talked about at the beginning,
a
hermaphrodite being was actually
right.
What they had. And then we afterwards they were a male and a female, but it wasn't even a male to begin with. It was it was a really hermaphrodite in the most mystical sense of the word, but you could say an intersex.
Well, even if you take the very typical Christian view that, you know, God created Eve out of from a rib from Adam, then Eve is the first intersex person because she's partly male. So, you know,
boom. Everyone at home, you just got boomed right there.
So, yeah. So, look, you know, there is no doubt. And if you look at if you look at the angels and you look at the appearance of angels right through, you know, a lot of texts actually, they're never given a gender. Angels don't have a gender.
No, they are.
That's right. So, you know,
they don't really do anything. They're just kind of things.
That's right. So, you know, we have the existence of beings that are not, you know, male or female, or we just have to try and get our heads around the fact that in the real world, and, you know, not just intersex people, but out there in nature more broadly, there are animals, plants, other things that don't fit into that dichotomy.
Now, I'm talking to Andy, we're coming close to the end of our show. We've been having a wonderful conversation about intersex and its relationship with religion. And quite, I'm glad to come across someone who is, you know, about able to hold their own theologically. That's always a nice change. But maybe let's talk about the wider, let's talk about church culture, because as we were touching on, churches may theoretically be accepting theologically, but then in practice, how can a church or any other religious group be more accepting?
Well, I guess it's like any other issue. It's learning about the issue, understanding it, and then being supportive. Now, one of the principal concerns that I have is, excuse me, every time we trot out that terrible, terrible, you know, man and woman line that we use, every time that happens, there's a parent out there who belongs to a church, who has a child that's born intersex, and is afraid suddenly for what that means for their child's position in the church and the sorts of support they might otherwise get from that church, because they've really, what the church is saying, if they trot that line out, is there's no place for my child in that church.
So you're talking about, for example, a longer-term language issue.
Yes, certainly.
And that dividing things too clearly gender-wise can be...
It's very hurtful for parents. And as I said, what it does is unnecessarily generate that fear that their child is... You know, the church is a place they should be able to turn to feel safe and supported and secure. Now, if they can't go to their own faith community with their child with an issue like that and feel that they're going to get a sympathetic and supportive hearing, then who else are they going to turn to? So I think it's very important, yes.
What else can a group do?
As I said, education is a big thing. I think if it's possible for, and, you know, I have spoken to some church groups, not too many, but there are people out there who can, and a friend of mine spoke to the Salvation Army some time ago about intersex issues and, you know, what's involved. Getting somebody out to talk to your church group so that your church has a better understanding of these issues is vital, I think. So creating a safe space, you know, so people can come along and not feel like the monster. You know, I'm not the monster turning up that nobody understands.
There's probably a lot of groups as a whole that sort of say, well, we would never turn anyone away. Isn't that what else? What more is there to do?
And that's the difference between tolerance and acceptance, I'm afraid. And, you know, we often hear the word tolerance used. No, we don't want to tolerate people. Tolerate is to put up with under sufferance by definition, and that's not what we're about. You know, we're about being accepted as somebody who is a valued member of a faith community.
Now, I want to keep pushing here on this. So, fine, I don't want to be tolerant. I don't want to be tolerant.
Yes.
And so I clean up my language a little and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Are we done? Is that it?
No. And this is, again, a lot of this is about this being part of the problem rather than being the solution. And at the moment, it's not a matter of just cleaning up language. It's being particularly sensitive to the way that we prosecute, if I can use that term, issues like same-sex marriage as opposed to marriage equality. So even churches out there that are, you know, now starting to go down the path of saying, oh, yes, but, you know, we support same-sex couples and same-sex marriage. Again, that broader language issue needs to be about marriage equality rather than same sex. So that, again, we're not cutting intersex people out and saying they're not part of our little group, because we've now, we've done the hard yards. We've accepted the same sex community. What more could you possibly want?
What about those outreach type groups? So tomorrow, and actually if anyone is going, I'd love to see you there. I'm going to be at the Pride Shabbat service at Temple Beth Israel in Alma Road. It's, you know, looking to do an outreach of saying, you know, we accept people who are GLBTI, stuff like that. Do we need to see more of that sort of thing?
Well, we do. And one of the things that our church is looking at doing, this is the Uniting Church in Williamstown in Electra Street. One of the things we're looking at doing for Wear It Purple Day is actually having a Sorry Day service, if you like, which is to invite the GLBTI community to come along and the Uniting Church to basically say we're sorry for the way that religious institutions in the past have treated a lot of GLBTI people, because I think it's an important message to get across.
Absolutely. And it also sounds to me that to some degree, suddenly I'm motivated to ask, what does the GLBTI community or the GLBTQ community need to do to be more accepting of the I?
Again, we've stood shoulder to shoulder for many long years. We've had people from the intersex community on things like ministerial advisory committees to the Victorian government to look at a number of issues to do with health and legislation. So, and again, we've added our voice, if you like, to fighting for the rights of the rest of our community. Now, recently in Canberra, and I understand that there's since been apologies for doing it, but when there was a chance, for instance, for in the ACT for them to get through same-sex marriage to try and get it through in a different way, they actually dropped the intersex community from that suddenly, because they figured they had more chance of getting it through if it was just about the same-sex community. So it does two things. One thing is it makes the intersex community feel like we're not part of it. We've stood side by side, and then all of a sudden when it's not convenient, we get dropped off. But I think it sends a broader message to the rest of the community, both the religious community and the government, to say we're not a community. We don't stand together as a community. We're a bunch of individual groups, and if it's not convenient, we'll split ourselves up and argue amongst ourselves. And I think that sends a very poor message.
Well, this has been a really, really informative for me. Sometimes I guess as an interviewer, you go and you do your research and you go, okay, I'm learning all this stuff and talk to you beforehand. This is the sort of stuff we're going to talk about. And then I'm sitting here and I still learned a whole lot. Yeah. It was really, really wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
I think it's really important to sort of tackle these issues that sometimes might otherwise we suddenly don't discuss, and I can talk about more and more different faiths and stuff like that. But then we need to, you know, turn back into some of these more specific issues. So thank you.
Thank you for the invitation. It's good to be here.
You've been listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. I want to thank once again Andy, a wonderful guest. She came in, spoke to us, very informative. Next week, Rachel will be back on the show. That's right. You might not have heard from Rachel for a few weeks. She'll be here helping me out. And that's the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.